Start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
All right, everyone, welcome to the April 18th edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slipmode, in the house, along with...
VR.
And Cyber Bob.
Cyber Bob,
yeah,
is in
right.
the house.
That's right.
Anybody out there that's into cybering, Cyber Bob is for you. No, I'm just joking. Oh, man.
You feel cyber with anything and anyone.
Anywhere. At any time. Okay.
It doesn't even need a computer. It'll type on the wall and spew on it, too.
Yeah. Cyber Dreams is out again. He's at a conference, but he'd love to make it. I'm sure he'll be back on other shows. Also, I've met one of the Hacksaw chicks. I won't say where. But, yeah, that was kind of interesting. Well, I saw them when they were at DEF CON as well, so. All right, well,
And I'm sure that he tried to, coerce her into packet sniffing with him.
There was a little bit of packet sniffing and, password, brute forcing.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I still have respect for you there, pal.
But I'm running my intrusion detection, so I'm safe. Okay.
As long as you got to use a firewall, you're okay.
Yeah. Actually, I told Sarah Dreams, I was like, hey, you should do something on intrusion detection. I don't know. We'll see if he does that or not. Okay, well, on to the news. We've got a lot of it, and here we go. Okay, so leading in to... the news. I actually saw like a screenshot of this program a while ago, and I thought it was some, you know, zero-day underground type of thing, and it actually turns out their second version, they released it. It's a program called Metasploit 2.0. It's an update design framework to the Metasploit tool, which allows security experts to check computers on their networks and identify those vulnerable to newly released flaws. The updated framework, known as Metasploit Framework 2.0, enables people to create standardized plugins for the tool so that they can legally hack into computers by manipulating the latest security holes. The tool already has 18 exploits and 27 different possible payloads. Overall, the tool could help administrators find and patch systems vulnerable to a new flaw, thereby blocking a would-be intruder from breaching a company's network security, according to Moore.
Now, couldn't that be turned around?
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
And here it is. Such a tool, however, could also become an online attacker's friend, automatically automating the detection of vulnerable servers so that even a person with little technical knowledge could break into a computer, security researchers maintain. A recent report by market research firm Forrester into software security threats found that attacks explode, after unscrupulous hackers build script versions. Many critics agree, saying such exploit testing scripts, which turn into a highly technical vulnerability into code that can be run with very few commands, allows far too many people to become online attackers.
Script kiddies.
So I've downloaded Metasploit, and I've checked it out. And basically, yeah, it basically allows you to plug in exploit code, use it, you know, do the return bind shell and all sorts of stuff to Windows machines. You could, you know, potentially use it for anything. But it's just kind of funny. I think it's just a tool. It could be used for many things. There's lots of tools out there that don't include the exploit code that allow you to find out if something's vulnerable. You don't need the exploit code to see if it's vulnerable, right? I mean, you can. There's plenty of scanners out there that say, hey, this is vulnerable to this. And,
it just narrows down the parameters for it.
Yeah. So this definitely allows you to exploit it. I don't know. You know, I think I was thinking about this earlier to answer the question is, if this is a good thing to release types of things like this into the public. And I don't know. I mean, in the end, it's just going to keep the administrators on their toes and bugs and patches to come out more quickly and actually make such a headache that people might design their software with security in mind. So, and we've seen a lot of that happening. And
you know, what just kind of triggered off is, you know, with all these patches and fixes and all this, you know, all these things that you have to download to fix your computer and make it more secure, how far off do you think it might be until your processor is so overwhelmed with patches that it virtually becomes useless because it's just processing itself?
Well, what do you mean? I mean, you're just like, running the software.
Yeah, well, like, you know, just to have Windows up or you do something or you, like, click an icon, it's got to go through, you know, it's got to process.
Maybe on a Windows machine.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I don't know, you know, it seems like every time they come out with a new version or something like that, it just requires more requirements. Not so with the new Linux kernel or other Unix-style machines. For some reason, they actually end up getting faster and more improved code. So I don't know. That's
go figure.
Yeah. It's very interesting. All I know is that, I don't know, things like that are going to come out regardless. So people can have their opinions on it. I guess the real idea is to make it so those programs don't work, you know? Make it so it's not successful. So that's the bigger idea I would take away from everything. You know, I think patching your system and stuff like that can be an incredible, amount of time to continually do that. You know, I do it all the time. I have to check things, stay abreast of information, stay on mailing lists, and hear about what's going on. But I don't know. To me, it's fun because that's what I do. But a lot of people, you know, you may have to do lots of other administration tasks, and running patches all the time is probably not one of the funnest ones.
I think it's kind of mundane and boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, joy, there's another exploit. I've got to patch the hole.
Yeah, I get excited to try to see if I can patch it really fast. I'm like, I knew about it. It's patched. Done. So I can hear everybody else complain. Well, have it, and I still got to get a patch.
And then the next day when you find out that patch, like, opens up four more holes, and you're like, crap, I got to patch that.
Yeah, and then I'm like, that's it. Throwing a big firewall in front of everything. I'm not letting anything in. Yeah, well, sometimes that doesn't really work.
Yeah, because then there's all
the holes
email,
in that. Yeah, especially if you have Outlook, and you check your email, you might be screwed.
And you just turn it off.
Outlook, you deserve whatever you get.
Yeah, yeah. Beware. You know, actually running Outlook on other systems is bad. I was just kind of curious. It doesn't affect, like, Linux if you run Outlook in Wine, you know, but it might affect your Wine. Okay, well, we've talked about this before in the past, but it's definitely something we're going to hear a lot more about. Don't know how much we'll hear about it because it sounds like something you wouldn't want to hear. The government would like to tell us so much about. Basically talking about the U.S. military taking steps to militarize space. And they have a few projects.
Well, of course, because then they can get their grubby hands on it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to get your hands on.
That's right. So they feel even more powerful. So they need
more
funding. So they need more funding to back their, you know, patrol and control of an infinite amount of space.
I'm waiting to get my space license.
So you can float freely.
Yeah. Without restriction.
Without restriction.
While the military's presence in space stretches back decades, now there appears to be a new emphasis. Officials in the Bush administration and the Department of Defense are actively pursuing an agenda called for the unprecedented weaponization of space. The first real step in that direction appears to be coming in the form of a little-known weapons program in the U.S. Military Defense Agency. The agency has now earmarked $68 million in 2005 for something called the Near Field Infrared Experiment. The NFIRE satellite is primarily designed to gather data on exhaust plumes from rockets launched from Earth, and defense officials claim that it is therefore designed as a defensive rather than offensive weapons. But the satellite will also contain a small kill vehicle and a projectile that takes advantage of the kinetic energy of objects traveling through low Earth orbit, which move at several times the speed of a bullet, to destroy an oncoming missile or another orbiting satellite. As one senior government official and defense expert described the program, which has seen cost delays and increased congressional scrutiny, we're crossing the Rubicon into space weaponization. I don't know, it makes sense to have defense out there, but, you know, as long as it doesn't prohibit, you know, everything that, you know, they say on Star Trek, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it's really, we only really need that to protect us from ourselves.
Yeah, or Japan.
Yeah, which is still us.
Which we're very afraid of Japan.
Which I say us
for
as
some reason,
like,
terrified of Japan.
I say us as human beings, just in general. All of us as a species.
Yep.
Because I don't think we have to worry about, like, some outer space attack.
Well, I guess it's something that society's become increasingly more accustomed to, is the fact of all these defense measures and dealing with a society that basically has really stripped away a lot of your privacy and freedom and rights, you know, as long as you don't make the wrong person upset.
That's right.
You know, you can do whatever you want, say whatever you want until you make someone mad.
That's right. Or you say a certain word combination which could be interpreted as a threat or an associated threat.
See, why can't Howard Stern just cuss on the radio? I don't understand. It's just like cussing on television.
Well, he can't really cuss on television.
Yeah, he can.
He can. He's on cable.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Does he cuss?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
See, so why can't it just go through
the
airwaves?
Everything bleeped out on the radio is not bleeped out on television.
That's weird. Is it played after 10 or 12 or whatnot?
No, it's played in the morning during a show. It's live.
Oh, wow. Okay.
See, I don't know why they just don't allow that to be on the radio. I mean, just have, like, certain areas of the band saying, okay, these are the areas where they can cuss and do that stuff. And then, you know, there's the other areas where they don't do that stuff. And to me, actually, I mean, radio is probably far less, you know, I don't know what the word is, that would make me feel upset, you know, because you can't see stuff.
I think it's more accessible, kind of like newspapers.
Yeah.
And so, let's say you can have, let's say you're...
Any 4 or 5 year old kid can go down to Radio Shack and pick up a radio and start listening to Howard Stern cussing up a storm.
But doesn't everybody have a TV in their house? Or three?
Well, most Americans do have two, but that is more, that is easier to regulate by the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio?
Yes, definitely.
Just by
that's right, because it's like in the living room.
Just by purchasing cable, you already are aware of the fact that there might be something inappropriate on television.
Yeah. I know. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. They should have some form of audio to where you could, you know, say those kinds of things. Like an adult audio.
Right. Oh, yeah, like that.
They do. It's called AM radio.
Yeah, that's...
But there's no cussing on AM radio.
Yeah, there is.
No, there's not. No way. I listen to AM radio all day long. No cussing on AM radio.
I've heard cussing on AM radio before. 550.
No.
That's the Republican channel, isn't it?
There's no way.
My stepdad listens to 550 all the time. I hear cursing on there all the time.
I listen to it all day long. They do not curse. All day long. I swear.
So you really just want talk radio that they can swear?
Well, no. I mean, because then it would probably degrade the conversation a lot.
Yeah.
Right,
but what I'm saying is, like, they should have an adult version.
Probably XM radio.
I think they might have something like that.
See, that would be it.
They have talk shows on XM radio.
Because you're paying for it. It's kind of like cable.
It's definitely unregulated.
Well, it's kind of like cable, where you purchase the service, so you know, or you have to be somewhat aware of what's going to go on there.
I wonder if they censor their songs on XM radio.
Probably not.
I've never heard it before.
Yeah, neither have I. Because I kind of have, you know, intrinsic, like, problems with paying for... You have to purchase the unit, and then you have to pay for the service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, well, the radio's just good.
That's how everything goes nowadays.
Oh, I know. And I don't...
One day, someone thought of that, and then everybody's like, you know what? That's a genius. And everybody started doing it.
Right, and then we don't have any choice, so...
Yeah.
I choose to pull myself out of the system now and... Yeah. Go, I want choice! I love
it. And if I'm paying for it, there better well be some cussing on it.
Or the exclusively intellectual channel.
Oh my gosh, the adult sci-fi. This is the young sci-fi. Yeah, so I don't know. I think they should have something where, you know, where they have that for audio as well. And maybe they do on XM. I don't have any XM because I'm not going to pay to get it.
Yeah,
I just don't want to pay to get it. Okay, well, this is kind of an odd article, but I felt like it might apply to the show, but I brought it in. Basically, it's just saying that surgeons who play video games have less problems and more accuracy doing surgery.
I heard a story
really,
about that.
Really, you think?
Yeah. all those years on the couch playing Nintendo and PlayStation appear to be paying off for surgeons. Should they be studying medicine and law?
Well, I think they're talking about when they were younger.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just joking. Researchers found that, man, does that mean I'm old? Whoa.
Oh, yeah, dude, we're old.
Man.
I'm not old.
We're old.
Yeah, whatever.
Researchers have found that doctors who spend at least 3 hours a week playing video games made about 37% fewer mistakes in laparoscopic surgery and performed the task 27% faster than their counterparts who did not play video games. Maybe they're just old guys, you know?
No, because there's...
And the hip guys are playing the video games, so they're like, yeah, get in here,
well,
do surgery, get out.
The story I heard on that was saying the particular surgery they were talking about was done using robotics, like a video game.
Well, liposcopic is, it's actually, you don't cut open very much. You actually insert it, make a very small incision, and then you use actually a tool to go inside. And then it's, you know, then you're able to do whatever you need to do inside the body through a very small incision. It's really, really kind of neat.
That does sound pretty neat.
Yeah.
I swear, I don't know what VR does all week. But he is always jam-packed with some bit of information to bring. Not to just the show, just to about every time I see him.
I always learn something new every time I hang out with VR.
Yeah, it's usually something that's useless, but I mean, no, I'm just joking. No, it's very useful if you're in that particular area. Yes.
Which is actually it's going to be it's kind of the first step towards like nanotechnology, to like just like insert a little robot into you and have it fix you.
Oh, I did not save that story. I remember reading it. I didn't save it. They said they found the equivalence of cash in the human brain.
Really?
Yeah, it's in the frontal lobe, and I forget exactly all the details, but, yeah, they found the area where it's short-term memory, where things come in and get cashed and then get sent out afterwards.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting that they found that.
That is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
they'll more likely find it that it moves around in people, and it's different in different places and different sizes for everybody.
I wish I had more details on like how the brain works. That's something I never see. You know, they're like, this is what it looks like, and then they divide it up and they tell you these little things.
That's because they don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Have no idea. It's still a black box.
It's incredibly complicated.
Hmm.
Because I did research on it in high school, and people just don't know a lot of stuff about it.
I've done major research in much higher academic levels, and they have no idea.
Wow.
It's pure unadulterated theory. It's, wow, there's some activity here when we give this stimulus. Okay, that must be cash.
Yeah.
Great.
Over here is euros.
But yet at the same time when they do that, there's a whole lot of other activity in the brain still. So what they do is they correlate that with a great amount of people when they give the same stimuli. But as you and I both know, we can both look at a paperclip and think of completely different things.
Of course.
Yeah, I know how to fold it up and make it actually, like, where you put it down, it hops.
Oh, yeah, the little,
like,
yeah.
Very exciting stuff.
See, that's re-engineering the paperclip, so a different part of his brain would have lit up.
Mm-hmm.
But that just could be where the image of a paperclip or whatever their stimulus was that was most differentiable to the brain actually went to the frontal lobe and triggered some synapses and went into thought.
You know, I took an IQ test about 2 weeks ago.
Really?
It wasn't one of those crappy online IQ tests.
It was.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
It was very crappy. But yeah, it was like 40 questions. Took it, and I took it at like 7 in the morning. I was like, I saw this pop up, and it's like, take your IQ. So I did, and I got a 133. So
the equivalent of impulse shopping online.
says I was a visual mathematician. So
visual mathematician.
I took one of those a while back, and it said that I had the IQ. I was equivalent to the IQ of a golden retriever.
Nice.
Yeah, so I felt really good about myself. And you can still see that I'm kind of scarred by it.
Folks, his face is turning red right now.
I hope I'm a little brighter than a dog.
That's evil. They're never going to sell their product if they tell
that's
everyone that.
We are.
They told me I'm 133 because they want me to sell me their product. You know?
Pretty much. That's what it was.
You're great. You know? Check out how
you know
are.
What? I should have thought about that. I think I probably, you know, completely was crushed, and I didn't realize that they were probably selling some brain supplement.
Yeah, mine was a breakdown of everything.
Yeah, they're like, you're like a dog. You're trying a focus factor.
You know what's interesting is actually there was a scrambled up word in there, and it said this scrambled up word comes out to being a, and you select like a city, a state, a country, an ocean, something else. And I was talking to this girl, and I was like, oh, yeah, I took the IQ test, yada, yada. And she goes, yeah, that says England. It's a country. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I took that same test, but I didn't finish it because I got bored.
Which IQ is actually like 238.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering if I got that particular question. I don't know which one I chose. I was like, maybe it's a country because there's more countries and states, you know. I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of curious.
But, of course, he probably got it right just by he's thinking, ooh, what are the permutations of that versus probability?
Yeah, I did. That's exactly what I did. I forgot what I checked. But, I'll get all the answers and post them online. Yeah, right. yeah, all right. Well, all right, moving right along. That's a pretty interesting story, and I couldn't believe this was a Cisco product that this involved. But basically, in the Cisco Wireless LAN Solution Engine, on all their releases and their hosting Solution Engine software, they have a default username and password that is present in all of the releases. A user who logs in this username has complete control of the device. This username cannot be disabled, and there is no workaround.
On Cisco routers?
Cisco Wireless LAN Solution. It's like their Wi-Fi product, their Wi-Fi devices.
Cisco makes low-end stuff like that?
Low-end?
Like end-user stuff, or is that like high-end switch wireless stuff?
It's I mean, medium to high end.
Yeah.
Well, that's really scary.
And you know they own Linksys now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not a problem with Linksys. Yeah, it's interesting that they actually have a back door in that. And actually, I heard somewhere that they said that they weren't going to be providing software updates, but that's not true because I looked at their actual advisory, and a patch can be downloaded for registered customers only to be able to update that. So
it is fixable?
It is fixable.
All right.
But, you know, they don't say anything in here like, yeah, our employees just put a backdoor in. You know, it just says, hey, this is what it does. This is what it is. But it's very interesting
they probably plotted it and then released it and then went, oh, yeah, there's a backdoor. And
yeah.
Hope no one really noticed.
Or, you know, they're like, we're done with our backdoor and you guys can patch it up now.
That makes you wonder, like, what kind of stuff people put backdoors in. I'm sure there's a backdoor in, like, everything.
Oh, probably.
Well, there's a lot of backdoors in, I think, Unix programs back in the day, you know, back in the early 90s and stuff that people would put backdoors and release it, you know, and they say, oh, there's this backdoor in this program, you know, be worried about it. I remember reading a few things like that happening in the past, so.
I remember reading something about when they were developing the 2.5 kernel, one of the kernel developers tried to slip in a backdoor,
right.
And it just barely got caught.
Yeah?
Just barely.
That's kind of interesting, because why would you put it in a development kernel, the backdoor, you know what I mean?
Well, it was such an insignificant piece of code, it would have made it into 2.6.
Huh.
Once it gets committed, it's there, and nobody would have ever touched that again.
Yeah,
I forget what it was for, but it was something insignificant.
Because if you don't put it in the development one, when it went to, you know, to
yeah, that's
the
right,
market
it
version,
over.
It would have been like, well, why do we have this? Why is there a change there? It would have been much more detectable.
That's pretty interesting. You know, you got to wonder, though, why somebody would do that. I mean, I don't know if it's like the coolness KRAD factor that they did it, but...
I that's probably why.
Yeah, because, I mean, really...
Nobody's going to sit there and use a backdoor on every Linux box that's out there running the 2.6 kernel. There's no point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, the original author, what is he going to do? Like, hope that a certain company installs it so he can, like, you know, break into it or what?
Probably to, you know, check on his ex-wife or something.
Yeah.
Probably insecure.
So he can break into Hotmail. You know how many people, like, IM me all the... Not IM me. Message me all the time on IRC asking me if I can break into Hotmail for them. I can't believe it. Like, Hotmail is, like, you know, where you want to break into, you know? Can you think of more, like, prestigious things to break into?
Well, no, that's actually what...
Reading somebody else's spam is...
No, because they're actually trying to get into, their girlfriends or boyfriends.
That's exactly what it is. We had girls come in. They're like, hey, you know, can you help me get into my boyfriend's? And I was like... No. Like, I don't even know how to do it, you know, honestly, but...
And even if I did it, I wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, I'd be like, who cares? I'd be like, what's your boyfriend's email? I'll read it on my own.
it might be really good.
Yeah. But,
ooh, he's having hot, steamy stuff.
yeah, so do you live in Arizona? Okay, because you might
feel Cyberbob's
all
getting excited now.
Yeah.
Cyberbob. Oh, Hotmail is my favorite. Oh, Lord, that's why they call it hot.
Hotmail actually sounds like hot mail, so...
Oh, yeah, there's a reason why they chose that name.
Wow. Bill's favorite name. All right, well, this is kind of interesting. Hotmail. All right, no more advertising for snail mail, Hotmail mail. All right. Well, this is kind of an interesting bit of information about AMD and Intel. Not always, but in the past, Intel obviously was the leader in processors up until, you know, last few years or 2000 beyond, where AMD actually gave them a pretty good run for their money. Well, with AMD's release of their new 64-bit processor, it seems like instead of Intel developing their own instruction set, they just reverse-engineered AMD's. After investigating the instruction sets used by 64-bit chips from AMD and Intel, an industry analysis has conducted that Intel reverse-engineered the AMD 64 instruction set to create its own 64-bit microprocessor architecture. Tom Half-Hill, analysis at a STAT MDR in San Jose, said Monday back in March, that he had compared the instruction sets of AMD 64-bit chips called the AMD 64 with the 64-bit extensions to be used on the Intel Xeon processor and future desktop chips. The smoking gun, Half-Hill said, was Intel's choice to mimic a decision AMD made in its early Opteron designs and later revised. Intel's decision, however, clearly places AMD in the role of market leader. There is no shame in it, Half-Hill said, of the reverse engineering. AMD has reverse engineered everything Intel has done for years.
Oh, yeah. Well, why? It's cheaper to reverse engineer somebody else's research and development. It's a whole lot cheaper than putting in all that R&D money.
Yeah, definitely. So it just, for those AMD fans out there,
that's not,
it's something to,
you know,
to put down in the... So that's if you're a big AMD fan and you got some guy that says Intel's the best, you can shove it in the face of the Intel guy that they're out there sucking it up to the AMD god.
So, down boy,
down, down. So yeah. Okay. This is pretty interesting as well. You guys have anything on your minds? Anything that you'd like to bring up or talk about? I mean, I've got plenty of things here. But I feel like opening it up to you guys if you have anything you want to talk about. I know CyberBob's a big Linux magazine reader and other stuff. But, yeah,
other stuff.
Oh, like CyberMail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have any plastic over here for, like, some shielding?
No, not at all. No?
No, not
at all?
Nah.
Nothing interesting at all?
Not that comes to mind.
Wow.
Way to put me on the spot, Slip. Thank you very much.
All right, you are on the spot. All right, well, just let me know at any time. Okay, well, I guess some interesting information that I'll talk about here other than stories. Let's see. I'm now running GNOME 2.6. Hooray. And using XORG instead of X386, so that's nice. Everything's running pretty well. Runs about the same speed. I haven't noticed any increases or decreases. And let's see, what else? I tried out Rootkit Hunter, RK Hunter, at rootkit.nl. And, was it Rootkit? Or was it Root Hunter? Just Google RK space Hunter. And that's like an alternative to CHK Rootkit to find rootkits on your Linux and BSD machines. And I believe they said it works on Solaris as well. And it gives a very, very, very detailed report and readout. And it checks for a few more things that CHK Rootkit checks. So that's pretty interesting as well. And let's see. What, running 2.6.5 now? Is that what you're running?
Yep, 2.6.5.
Yeah. I have a strange problem on mine. I'll tell you about it later. It's not with the kernel. It's with something else. I think something happened with my package. But yeah, did that. What else? Played with the Metasploit thing. That was pretty cool. Yeah, GNOME 2.6 looks exactly the same as the original one. but they made Nautilus not as cool. I don't know. Before Nautilus did a lot of... I don't know. Maybe I haven't played with it enough. But,
I thought all they did was, like, swim around and... Well, actually, they kind of, like, squirt around.
What are you talking about?
Nautiluses.
Oh, no.
The little snail creature that, you know, floats around the sea that
squirts
water.
We're talking about the Nautilus file manager.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
Actually, when Nautilus first came out, it was pretty bloaty.
It was.
Super bloaty.
And then they put it on the Mozilla engine.
Yeah.
It kind of toned it down a little bit.
Yeah. And now it's like there's no bloat. And I kind of wish they had a little bit of the bloat.
There's no bloat at all?
No bloat.
I haven't used 2.6 yet.
Yeah, there's not very much bloat at all.
So it thinks.
It looks just, you know, you open it up and it doesn't have all the extra stuff it used to have. Okay. Well, all right. Well, here is something that's very interesting, and I would love to see this come out, and obviously I think it is, according to this story. John Woo has optioned Nintendo's best-selling video game franchise, Metroid, for the big screen. So it's Hollywood Reporter. Woo will produce a sci-fi movie and has the option to direct. Torrance Chang and Brad Fox Hoven will share production responsibilities with Leon Rock Productions. Suzanne Zizzi is also attached to the project. The plan is to release the film before 2006. The movie will center on the origins of the game's female protagonist, sexy bounty hunter Samus Aran, and related to her adventures battling the insidious, life-sucking Metroids and their controlling force, Mother Brain.
Now, is it going to be a real actor or CGI?
It's probably going to be Angela Jolie.
Okay, you know, then that might not be too bad, then.
Put her in, put her in Tomb Raider, put her in Metroid.
Hollywood must just be running out of ideas.
Well, yeah.
Oh, it so is. Every formula has been done. Why do you think they're starting
to do... Some Hollywood exec is probably sitting at his house watching his kid play a video game. You know what? We should make that into a movie.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Kid Icarus to come.
Actually, I thought the ending of that little scenario was a gun to his head because... he's completely useless now. Because that's why they're starting to do, like, you know, history films and all that, and it's...
Yeah, pretty soon they're going to run out of history, and...
Oh, yeah, so there's going to be, like, strictly, like, you know, multi-billion-dollar budgets for educational use. Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to need you to come in on Saturday.
Yeah. That would be great.
And, you know, we're going to need you to come in on Sunday as well. Yeah, we've had a few cutbacks.
Yeah.
Okay, well, for all you guys out there paying 99 cents per song, guys and gals, well, you may have to pay more pretty soon. Remember how online music stores were going the route around the music industry? The Pigopolis, have barely got their feet under the table and have already demanded more. The Wall Street Journal reports that five major labels think that 99 cents per song is too cheap. And
oh,
just,
God.
But it's like 13 songs or 15 songs on a disc. That's 13, 15 bucks,
yeah.
Right? And are discussing it's too cheap because they're not buying the whole album.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's pretty much it. They're not getting their huge lump sum.
Yeah.
They're not wanting a nickel and dime it because, well, they're eventually going to die off like the dinosaurs if they
yeah.
don't.
And a disgusting price hike that would increase the tariff to $1.25 up to $2.99 per song. I'm not paying $3 for a song.
No, oh, where God. Am I paying $3
it,
for
it
a
better
song.
Be 15 minutes long.
This is going to start sounding like the gas prices, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
songs
man.
Have gone up. What? I want to know. Let's email the FCC.
You know, one nice thing about this, the way what might come out of this is, like, local bands that get on the internet and go, hey, download my song for 99 cents. They might get a whole lot more play. They might get a bigger following. And then you get enough of those together.
See, then it's no longer going to be around about music. It's going to be the tactful way of getting the cheapest music and best music as possible.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, what that eventually is going to lead to is this huge underground movement of bands not wanting to sign up with the music companies.
The first rule of music club is to not sign up with the music company.
That's right.
The second rule of music club is to not tell the music companies you're a part of music club.
Exactly. It's all taking down the, you know, the bourgeois.
Oh, man. The current tariff is too much for most people. As saggy sales indicate, 99 cents per song is a price model designed to project CD sales. And not one designed to move people into a new digital music marketplace, senior staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Fred Lohman, told us recently. Whoa, that was tough. If an iPod has room for 4,000, does Apple think people are going to spend $4,000 filling it with music? As it is, online music stores are a loss leader, are barely covering operating expenses. Apple alone can consider its online store a success. It has driven demand for its iPod and given itself a toehold in the valuable new customer market. Some analysis reckon Apple's cut is as high as 33 cents. But once the bandwidth, manpower, and marketing are counted, and let's not forget that Apple pays Thompson an MP3 license fee on the iTunes software it gives away, there's very little to the bottom line. What it does do is incredibly help the iPod. And then it just kind of goes on the iPod and steers off into that portion of the article. But
that comment they made about people not having 4,000 songs, people have been collecting CDs since they came out. In, like, the early 90s.
Yeah.
Many people have a collection of more than 4,000 songs to put on their iPod.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, you know what? Oh, I don't have the link here. And oh, man. I have a link, and actually Decoder gave it to me. Maybe I shouldn't give it out, because it's just going to add to the lack of speed on this website. But it seems like every single song iTunes has is freely downloadable off this site.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll show you after the show. And hey, if you really want the link, and hopefully hopefully it's still up, go ahead and email me at slipmode@quest.net, Q-W-E-S-T, and I'll give you the link. I don't really care.
And if you are a Rio flunky, please mention so.
A what? Flunky? What?
A Rio flunky.
A Rio flunky? What's that?
The recording industries.
RIAA.
Yeah.
Oh, RIA. Oh, okay. Sounds like Daya, you know, RIA. You know, it just doesn't, when you say RIA, it just makes me think of something.
What about the DRM?
Well, it's
kind of
like the
songs.
Rico, the...
What about the DRM? Or is it
DRM strict?
Really?
There's nothing on it. Complete
right.
MP3s. Yeah. It's there. People have been downloading it. Yeah. So, yeah, if you want that, email me and have at it. Okay. You know, I know that you can, what is that? They had that law, right? If you hyperlink to certain things, you could be held liable, right? But what if you mention it, though? I don't think that anybody can do anything.
Well, that's just knowledge.
Yeah, but...
Except that you are enabling them.
Well, I'm enabling them, but I'm not telling them what to do. I just said, check it out.
Well, time will only tell, right?
Well, I'm not worried about
anything
like that.
That's just like saying,
hey,
this bank would be really easy to rob. You should go check it out.
Well, yeah.
They could walk right in and look at it. Yeah.
Well, exactly. this you can actually do by viewing, passively viewing without doing it. I'm not worried. I'm just kind of curious, you know,
where that gray area is.
Yeah. So, oh, well, I don't really
becomes
care.
A little bit more black.
Or red, depending on how hard you hit it.
At least it's not purple, huh, there, Bob?
Poor Bob, dude. Bob's the man. Bob's the man. Bob shows up. You know what? I didn't know it. There's Flagstaff 2600 meetings.
Really? In Flagstaff?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense because there's nothing else to do during the winter.
Well, there isn't. Yeah, they have about six people that go to their meetings.
They should drive down to Phoenix for our meetings.
Then there's about six to eight people, and then Tucson, they said it was around like 10 people.
There's people in Tucson, too?
Yeah. Yeah, go to #AZ2600 on irc.2600.net. I'm there all the time now, so I see all the people that come in. Yeah,
it sounds so dirty, though.
Gray Static. Gray Static on IRC. He's he's up in Flystaff.
Really?
He goes to the 2600 meeting. He's up there.
He needs to come down to the 2600 meeting in Phoenix.
So, wow. Well, we have a new guest here in the show. It's actually an insect flying through the room.
It's as big as a pigeon.
Yeah, you know what? Cyber Bob, do you have a digital camera at all?
Nope.
No digital camera. You've got all this digital crap, but you've got no digital camera.
No digital camera.
Wow. We need to get some pictures of this and put it up there. I was thinking about when I get enough time, changing the site around just a little bit, just the look, not what's on it.
Instead of the Linux, it does look very 1999-ish.
Well, I didn't really want to go for the whole, you know, Haxor look. You know. I don't know. I want to make it look a little cooler. But I was thinking about taking the Linux info out and changing it to text files and putting stuff in there. Okay, well, this is actually an interesting thing. I always say interesting before every story, but that's why I pick them, because I think they're interesting. If you don't think they're interesting, go to the forums and tell me they're not. and then post stuff that is interesting over at slipnet.org. Okay, well, I don't know exactly how this is going to work, but for some programs, but boxed programs... and some download programs might adhere to this. But basically, you know, when you get a cereal box or when you get food, and the label tells you everything that's included in the food and mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Well, why not do the same thing for software? And they have a few subjects like, this includes spyware. This includes advertisementware. You know, this includes, you know, this, and this. Okay.
That's true, especially if you buy it. You should be able to take some of that stuff out because you own it.
Yeah.
You don't own it. You're licensing it.
Oh, whatever. We need to change those laws.
I agree.
Spyware is a scourge of desktop computing. Yes, computer worms and viruses cause billions of dollars in damage every year, but spyware programs that either record your actions for later retrieval or that automatically report on your actions over the Internet combines commerce and deception in the ways that most of us find morally repugnant. But there is another way to fight spyware. I'm just reading another section of the article. An approach that would work because the authors are legitimate organizations. Congress could pass legislation requiring that software distributed in the United States come with product labels that will reveal to consumers specific functions built into the program, such as such legislation would likely have the same kind of pro-consumer results as the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906. The legislation that is responsible for today's labels on food and drugs.
Pure software. Wow.
Well, it would be pure, but it would tell you, you know, what's there. And that'd be interesting to make people adhere to that. I wonder, you know, if you bought Internet Explorer in a box, it probably would hit every one of those labels that you could possibly attach to
it. That'd be a really big box.
Yeah, pop-up spyware, adware...
Well, there's probably a lot of stuff on there that we don't really even have labels for yet, except for they do.
Yeah, crapware, you know, just all sorts of stuff.
Hey, have you heard anything about Microsoft buying Mozilla?
No, I'm just kidding. What? No.
I read that somewhere, like 3 days ago. I don't remember where I read it.
No.
I heard that Microsoft bought Mozilla.
But you don't believe that, right?
No, I don't.
No, I don't believe it either. But what a preposterous idea. Wow. That's repugnant. Wow. That's bad.
Wow. I think that's one of the biggest words I've ever heard you use. Or
oh, that is not true. That's like three syllables, dude. I said colostomy bag once.
That's two words or slip.
Well, it's colostomy is the exciting part. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Actually, more on Apple's iTunes. Apple Computer issued a cease and desist order to SourceForge to shut down the Playfair website. The development team is currently looking for a new home for the project. And what the Playfair program pretty much did was it takes one of the iTunes ITMS-protected AAC audio files, decodes it using a key obtained from your iPod or Microsoft Windows system, and then writes the new decoded version to the disk as a regular AAC audio file. It then optionally copies the metadata tags that describe the song, including the cover art, to the new file. So basically just strips the DRM of it. So you basically get an MP3.
That's really lame.
Yeah, so they removed it. Yeah.
So basically Apple said, I don't like this software program, so you SourceForge, you guys kick them out of your little deal.
Yeah, like, for instance, I have an old version of SoundStream Ripper,
mm-hmm.
which they banned it, but I found it, and it basically allows me to take real media files and turn them into MP3s,
mm-hmm.
and you can't find that anywhere on the net, and I've got it. So if you want that, email me at slipmodequest.net, and I'll definitely send that along. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't used it recently, so I don't know how well it works against any maybe new versions, but yeah. I think they're all the same, no matter what. So it should work. But, yeah. I don't know. Those kinds of tools, it's great to have them around. And I guess I can understand from Apple's point of view, they're trying to protect their investment. But, I don't know. Sometimes I can lean both ways. Sometimes I'm, like, down with the man. Sometimes I understand the company. But, I don't know. As long as it's out there, it's out there. Are you okay, Cyberbob?
Yeah, I'm good.
Cyberbob is down with the man. He doesn't want the man down. He's just down with the man. He hangs out with the man on a regular basis.
Well, actually, they cyber. He was just telling
me. He cybers with the man.
And he's got some really
what are you talking about?
Finishes.
I am
it was weird.
I am.
I'm scarred now.
Wow.
Rather a little off my conversation there about the man's fetishes. It was just, it was horrid.
It's pretty kinky. As far as I know. How do we get on this humor? I don't understand how we do it, but that's what we do here on the In and Out Show. Bunch of kooky guys locked up in a room with microphones and access to information. Okay, well, here's some more information. Not some more. First time I've said it. Here's some information about Microsoft basically clipping down its version of Longhorn so they can release it in 2006 because, well, I'm sure they need the revenue. Because they got a lot of court cases they're losing lately.
I'm sure they're not making enough off their Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, basically, they're going to be stripping down their... They're not going to include, basically, the file searching thing that they're going to include in the new version that they've been really boasting and talking about, which is going to be a new way to store, categorize, and find and search out files.
Isn't that kind of like bait and switch of, like, they're going... Hey, we got this great thing. It's really versatile. It does all those nifty gadgets. And then we're going to take all the good stuff off and sell you the crappy part.
And it's more like vaporware since nobody's bought anything yet.
Yeah, but yeah. They're promoting it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to... Then they're... Yeah, here, you can buy the crappy one.
Now they're like, you know what? This is the third time we've tried to do this. We just can't do it. So we're going to release this without it.
Well, Microsoft's been trying to do, like, speech-to-text for years, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they gave up, and they bought Dragon Naturally Speaking, you know? Which, that's a weird name. But anyways, yeah, here's some of the other changes that they've made, I guess. One of the original things that they were going to do is make the newest version, the next version of Office, only work on Longhorn. Why would they do that? To make you upgrade to Longhorn.
That is correct, sir.
And, of course, they're going to come out with a new file format that's not compatible with any of the previous versions of Microsoft Word.
Yeah, yeah. But they said that their new plans call for that the Office package work with previous versions of Windows as well. Good, because, you know, I'm not buying anything beyond Windows 2000. I'm going to be one of those guys that, like, I look back and they're still holding on to, like, 95, you know what I mean? With Windows 95, they're like, it works, I'm not going anywhere.
I was like that with 98 for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm doing that with 2K.
I was like, I refuse to buy Windows 2000, but
yeah,
I ended up getting
ME
Windows 2000.
ME is the best, though. No, just kidding. ME.
Oh, yeah, ME is my favorite.
ME is the worst thing that's ever hit software stores. Okay, and then also, let's see, the Longhorn development dragged. When Microsoft toyed with the idea of putting out a separate Windows release beforehand, codenamed the project, if I could turn the page here, Oasis, but Peterson wrote in his March 19th email but that Oasis has been shelved. So, yeah, you know, they're not selling anything new. They're just selling new PCs. And the PCs, I think, has actually gone downhill that people are buying new PCs because it's really easy to take your case and your CD-ROM and your hard drive and your DVD or your CDRW or whatever you got in there and just adding a new motherboard with RAM. And then you've got a whole new faster computer. And, you know, maybe upgrade your video card depending on your gaming needs. But, yeah, so I think they're looking to spike their revenue and recoup some of the losses of, you know, all those millions of dollars that they've been handing out recently. Like it's, you know, like nothing. All right. Okay, well, basically, we've talked about this in the past, that Microsoft was going after Lindows for using the name Lindows because they thought people might get confused that it meant Windows, right? No, I mean, I don't see how they'd be confused. It doesn't have a Windows picture on it. There's no logos that look the same. When you install it, it's definitely not Windows. It just lets you run some of their stuff. But basically, they had said that they say they would not continue a worldwide legal battle against Microsoft. Worldwide, meaning because they filed complaints in other countries where Windows was operating. They were coming up with a new name. I read what the name is, and I forgot it. It's like Lindis or something like that. It does start with an L. We really don't have any options. If Microsoft can sue us in every country in the world, he said, they clearly are not going to stop until we change the name or give up. So it's whoever's got the most money, most power.
If I were them, I'd make Windows spend as much money as possible.
Yeah, but they may not have that much money to spend. You know, it's
yeah, where are you going? Well, we fight Windows, or we, you know, put all our employees out of work.
Who says they have to spend money? Just like send some bum in there, pay him $10 an hour, so they'd be like, I'm a lawyer. No, you guys are wrong.
No, there's filing fees. It's
nuts. You know, that's how a lot of people win against other people. You know, it's not because they were wrong or right, or there's actually a person that, you know, ruled on an outcome. It's just because you know, they had more money and they could stay in the game longer. So. All right, well, the third Tuesday of every month is obviously when Microsoft comes out with their new patches. And their new patch actually fixed a lot of critical vulnerabilities. One of them that I want to read here is a vulnerability in Internet Explorer, ITS Protocol Handler. And basically it's a cross-domain scripting vulnerability in Microsoft Internet Explorer that could allow an attacker to execute arbitrary code. What the privilege is of the user running IE, the attacker could also read and manipulate data on websites in other zones or domains. So, yeah, not only that. I mean, there was 12 or so vulnerabilities, and, you know, 8 of them. Don't quote my numbers. I know they're wrong. But basically, there was a lot of vulnerabilities that were, you know, critical root, you know, taking over your box and letting the script kiddies run amok exploits that have been found to be in the operating system.
Yeah, I want to know what amok is so I can run it.
Run amok.
is that like some kind of strange automobile that's like, or is it spacecraft now that have to have space, you know, like Star Wars for?
I don't know. Maybe it's another measurement of like kilometer, mile, amok. You know, you run the muck and No, so I've got no idea.
If like, I could run amok in like 3.5 seconds, I'm like...
you're a muckinator.
All right.
No, it's not actually muck. It's amok. It's one word, A-M-O-C.
Well, I said run amok.
Well, then it's an A, which is kind of like anti, so it's...
But you guys are referring to muck as though
it's kind of like being an atheist. You're like, you have to first know what a theist is, and then go, A, theist.
A, no theist. Yeah.
So it's a muck.
All right. You know, actually, here's another thing, too. Here's another thing to announce. I'm just, I've got this Solaris 9 box running, and been running it for a while, and I can't wait for Solaris 10 to come out so I can actually get a lot of programs I've been trying to compile to work.
So it doesn't just run around in circles.
Yeah. So I have it up, and if anyone like an account, also, email me at slimmode@quest.net. And you can have an account on the Solaris 9 machine to do and have fun and do whatever you want. If you break it, though, just let me know what you did. And that's about all I have to do. I don't mind if you break it, though. All right. Not physically break it, but if you break in or exploit anything, go right ahead and just let me know. Okay. Well, we should go into our SCO news. You guys have any SCO news? I have SCO news.
Well, yeah, I think
you go first.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, the SCO news is that SCO is still a bunch of whores.
Yep,
that's what
good,
I had.
That's
good,
it.
Good.
Okay. So yeah, that's the SCO news. It was reported on several sites that SCO is a bunch of whores still, that they maintained themselves as being whores and in whore status at this moment, and they've been whores for quite some time. And are continuing to try to be whores.
I actually read that story on Slashdot just before I came over.
Really?
Yeah,
I saw it on CNN, ABC, NBC. You know,
on BBC as well.
Yeah, the BBC, you know, QVC, I heard on every...
I did see some stuff about the SCO supporters, and they said, keep pimping.
Keep pimping, right. Right. Yeah, so, SCO supporters. I can't even fathom a SCO supporter. I wonder what they look like. They're probably weird people.
Remember that one show where you had the pictures of the SCO supporters?
That's right.
Really funny looking.
Yeah, those guys were funky.
I get the image in mind from, like, I'm going to get you, sucker, of, like, the guy with the big, like, zebra-striped hat and the platform shoes.
Oh, God.
Walking down the street.
I don't know. I would, as soon as they launched that lawsuit, and I was working at SCO, I would have, like, find another job at ASAP. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. I've got so many things, and I feel like I'm missing stuff here to mention. Oh, Hack TV is out. For sure.
I saw that.
Hack TV. I don't know why Stink did the cold air intake, though. I don't know what that has to do with Hack TV. You know, I did think, though,
I think he just wanted to show off his new car.
Yeah. I think so, too. I think Stink likes his toys. you know, but I was thinking, though, I was like, sweet, you know, they got something they're going to jack into the computer and they're going to modify some settings. That's going to be cool.
I know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I was like, that's
air
awesome.
Intake.
I was like, sweet. Then they break out the cold. I was like, oh. Oh, man. And then I finally got to see what Bland looks like. I called Bland up that day and I was like, hey, Bland, I finally saw you. He's like, yeah, that's me. And, yeah. So, Hack TV, go get that at binrev.com. And, what else? What am I missing? Come on. You guys have stuff that you know about.
Why are you going to put me on the spot like that? Again?
Come on. Be on the spot. You know, of course, we're going to go. I'll be at Hope. I'll be at the Hope 5 conference. I won't be at DEF CON. I only go to one conference out of the two. I'll take Hope, and I'm going to be there. Let's see. Were you at the last 2600 meeting?
No, I was not.
I wasn't there either. You know, my school gets in the way.
My job gets in the way.
Yeah. And
my lack of having life gets in the way quite a bit.
Wow, you should just come down with us. And
yeah, you should. It's a lot of fun.
Right on.
Yeah, we can actually have XLogic tone down the power in his glove and then have VR touch it. It's basically the circuitry out of a flash mechanism and a camera.
Yeah.
Attached to a glove that has grounding wires.
Oh, so it gives you a good shock?
Yeah, yeah. Real good shock.
Oh, you could turn it up and I can handle it.
What was it like? I think the highest one was like 330 or something.
It'll like burn your hand, dude.
Oh, I've been, let's see, you know the ballast on the incandescent lights?
Mm-hmm.
I've been lit up by those. I've had 96 volts of DC current.
I'm going to start applying this information to your personality and see if that actually gives me any clues.
I've been electrocuted so many different ways that I should be dead, and I just keep on ticking.
Wow. When Logic tried out his gloves on me, he gave me like 220, and it burnt my hand, and my hand was twitching for like an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Yeah, and actually, if you make it to Severed Dreams Party on the 23rd...
It's DC, isn't it?
I don't know. I forget what it was.
It's battery powered.
Yeah.
No, through a capacitor.
Yeah, it's DC.
It.
That's why we don't use DC to play execute for the electric chair, mm-hmm. chair because...
It's smells.
Well, even though they're dead, they keep twitching.
Really?
Yeah, because there was actually a contest back in the day when... whether they're going to use AC current or DC current, and so they executed two prisoners with it.
Where do you figure this stuff out?
I'm telling you.
Is there a website that just got a bunch of useless crap on it that
like
I don't know
about?
Like
the AC one, they're like, you know, they hit the switch, and then he's done, and he doesn't move.
I hate to know who volunteered for that test.
Oh, they were convicted criminals.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And the DC guy, they like hit him, and then they shut it off, and he keeps twitching. They're like, he's not dead. So they hit it again. And so he keeps twitching. And so they hit it again. And finally they figured, you know, that they could smell, like, the burnt meat smell. And so they're like, wow, I guess he's really dead.
He's well done.
Anybody want some hamburgers?
You know, I would not want to die of electrocution. I would
Me
rather
either.
Be shot in the head, you know, with a .50 caliber. Just, you know, just do it right, you know.
Well, actually, it actually is really efficient because it screws up all your neural pathways, and so you don't know really what's going on. It's much rather than, you know, having a bullet go through your head, which 90% of your gray matter still is functioning.
I don't know.
I'd want to die in my sleep.
Being decapitated, you know, like there was a guy during the French Revolution that was such a hardcore scientist that he... had his like brother-in-law, I forget exactly who he had in the crowd, because he knew he was going to be executed. He said, "I'm going to blink my eyes for as long as I can," and he actually blinked about 13 times
after his head was cut off.
After, you know, because they would cut off the head, pick it up out of the basket, and show it to the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So he could still blink his eyes for 13 times, and they figured out that you can still see clearly for 30 seconds, and like another...
How did they figure that out?
By the actual...
What did they do, ask them? Tell us when you can stop seeing stuff.
No, because they can actually calculate that from how much like oxygen those cells use, mm-hmm. how much what your blood oxygen level is, glucose level, all that. They can kind of figure that out.
So could you technically keep a severed head alive, given the right... facilities?
I don't think.
Oh,
so.
In a perfect world? Oh, yeah. But not a perfect world now, is it?
But do you think at some point they'll be able to figure out a way to take a severed head and hook it up to some, to like a fake heart and some fake lungs and keep stuff flowing through it?
If nanotechnology, you know, if like we were able to go in there and rebuild.
Sounds like RoboCop.
Yeah. Is like, and keep, you know, keep synthetic things. You know, it's just that really strange place where it is imaginable, so mm-hmm. really it is feasible. Because from history's sake, if it's been imaginable, it's happened.
That's true.
So, I would say yeah. But not in any of our lifetimes, not in any of our children's lifetimes. Because why? Because we don't have flying cars yet. I want flying cars.
Hey, there are
flying cars.
Yeah, but I mean every day, like, you know, forget no more roads, kind of, you know, you take off from your roof, you get into the air freeway. Yeah, you could.
Everybody could if they wanted to, but...
Yeah, the economics is not there. Same thing with the head, is there's only a few people in the world that it would be worthwhile to keep their severed head alive.
Oh,
and
man.
For one, they're powerful enough
How
that they won't have their...
How many cars, like 60?
60, 70,000.
I know they make a...
Yeah, that's a four turbine thing, right?
Yeah. They make a personal helicopter.
Rotaries.
It runs like 25 grand. And it's like a car. It can carry two people. And you don't need a pilot's license or anything.
Why don't they...
No,
why doesn't
I think
some
you
guy...
would have to because it carries passengers. If it was a single passenger... And you might be able to get away with a sports license, but you don't need a physical for that.
Why don't they have...
This is California that they reported the story, so I don't know how...
Yeah, they're screwed.
Why don't they have a, you know, those Rocket-propelled body You strap it on your body. Why does
Because they can't carry enough fuel to keep you going for more than like 30 seconds to a minute.
When I read with the when they were experimenting with those in combat, is a lot of the time that on landing, the soldiers were breaking their legs.
Really?
So they come down a little too hard, mm-hmm. break their legs because of also the added weight of 150 pounds. So you've got to land down perfectly, otherwise your legs are shattering.
What about you land in water?
Yeah, that's
probably
great.
Probably just as bad, if not worse.
Because it really depends. It only cushions.
Yeah, then you drown,
bit.
Actually.
Yeah,
you got 150 pounds.
Yeah,
that'll take
yeah now you
got to
get that thing off really quick. And, you know, landing on water from any, like if you jump off 100 foot, like if you fall off the Golden Gate Bridge, you're still going to die.
Yeah.
It's like hitting concrete because it still compresses you that much. It's not really what you hit. It's how fast you slow down mm-hmm. that kills you.
Yeah.
Or hurts you. So.
Now
if you land on
Tempur-Pedic
stuff,
that
might be something completely different.
Tempur-Pedic. Wow. Or your number bed. Your sleep number bed.
Sleep number.
Sleep number is zero, please.
God. All right.
What's
well,
my landing number?
Well, we've definitely. This is usually the kind of talk we do after the show.
Yeah.
I just got
recording.
Continue.
I thought
this
you
good.
Turned this off.
No, we're still going.
Wow.
But yeah. All right. Well, this has been the In and Out show. Definitely up to date in the In and Out of. Well, after this, we'll be doing this even more. All right. Well, anybody else have anything to say? No, you don't.
All
okay.
Right.
So this is your host, Slip Mode, signing out.
This is VR later.
And Cyber Bob out.
See everyone in 2 weeks.